From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Before we start this show, I want to let you know it has some adult themes in it, so no kids in the car for this one. And if you leave the kids in the car and you still play the episode, don't blame me when they have nightmares. Coming up next on the Jordan Harbinger Show.
I had a buddy called George. He's a good guy. And we were fighting a fight, so these guys pulled guns out after the fight was over. And George pretended he had two guns in his pocket. Let him loose now! These guys thought he had guns. And they dropped the guy. This is insane, man. You can't make it up. It's like a movie. And we all got away with our money, too. But I'm saying, I've had all this stuff. I had a gun put to my head.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most fascinating people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. Our mission is to help you become a better informed, more critical thinker through long-form conversations with a variety of amazing folks, from spies to CEOs, athletes, authors, thinkers, performers, even the occasional astronaut, real-life pirate, hacker, special operator, music mogul, or extreme athlete. And if you're new to the show or you want to tell your friends about the show, I suggest our episode starter packs. These are collections of our favorite episodes on persuasion and negotiation, psychology and geopolitics, disinformation and cyber warfare, AI, crime and cults, and more that'll help new listeners get a taste of everything we do here on the show. Just visit jordanharbinger.com/start or search for us in your Spotify app to get started. Today on the show, one of the greatest bare-knuckle boxers of all time, Bobby Gunn. Really, the world champion of bare-knuckle, and man, what a story. Bobby grew up as an Irish traveler, or some people might say gypsy. We don't really say that anymore, kids. And he was fighting drunk men in parking lots by age 11. Age 11! We'll discuss Bobby's upbringing, his training, fighting in illegal underground matches run by the mob, actually kind of like all the mobs, and some close calls where he nearly died, as well as a bit of background into traveler culture and wild tales from Bobby's life as a fighter and beyond. Also in studio today is Staten Bonner, author of Bobby's biography, who spent something like a decade and a half shadowing Bobby for the book and almost died alongside with him, and was also in the basement with the leopards chained to the walls. You're going to hear that story. Staten adds color and teases a few stories out of Bobby that I don't think we would have gotten otherwise, and is, all in, a welcome addition to the conversation. By the way, if you have trouble understanding Bobby, you can go to our YouTube channel. We're going to have some subtitles ready. I can understand him just fine, but I think if English maybe isn't your first language, it might be a little bit harder. He's got a traveler accent. I didn't know that was a thing, but that's a thing. Also, please note graphic depictions of violence in this episode. So if you got little kids in the car, maybe skip to another episode for now and listen to this one later. All right, here we go with Bobby Gunn. So listeners of this show know I usually don't cover sports, and this is not exactly a sports story, but the press release, which I seldom even bother reading for the pitch for this, caught my attention because I read, Bobby, that your dad had you fighting basically just drunk guys in parking lots at age 11. And I like, that's one of the craziest things I've ever heard about someone's childhood. Like, people like to write about their childhood and they're like, yeah, I worked in my dad's bakery and I got up at 4 a.m. And I'm like, wow, that really sucks when you're 15. Beating up drunk guys in parking lots when you're 11 is an order of magnitude or 10 above that.
Maybe how about 9, 10 years old, I was doing that, fighting them guys. And you look at that today, it's like a form of child abuse, you would say. But if you understand where I come from, my culture, my upbringing, all dogs are dogs. They got canine breed, and all cats are felines, right? But there's different breeds of dogs, poodles, chihuahuas, and they're pit bulls. We're pit bulls, the gypsy traveler people with diapers on. I was throwing 1-2s. I immortalized the fight game. And when I say they're drunk, a lot of these guys weren't staggering down. They were there to fight, and they were laughing. Are you kidding? Fight this little boy?
Yeah.
A wee boy sitting like a bus stop, and I wasn't a normal wee boy. You know, I mean, I was like an assassin, but it prepared me. If you're going to go swim with sharks, you better train with sharks and be around sharks. You just can't start jumping and think you're going to be around. I was raised around it, formed into, molded by it. And unfortunately, in my life, there was a lot of darkness, and growing up, it was a tough, full world, my brother. You know, talk about ghettos in New York City and like Baltimore here. Brother, these ghettos were a hall of the end compared to where I come from. Just to get out my environment, I climbed them walls. A lot of black is evilness, drama, hatred. Porn is poverty. Just to get out of that, it's a great achievement in my life.
Have you, I never do this, by the way, and I'm not, I swear I'm not this guy, but have you seen Batman? Because you, it's like Bane, right? You know Bane, the guy that crawls out of that prison in the desert, and he's like...
No, Batman, yeah, I see, but I don't... It's, yeah. It's, I'm like Batman and Bane, but the life we had, it molded me to where I am and going and become a world champion in boxing and win the bare knuckle world title and fight these fights. But see, when I was fighting these other fights, these underground fights, bare knuckle fights, I was a seasoned fighter. At 13 years old, I was champion national titles, and I was seasoned. And I remember one time I went and fought at an event, and I beat this open-class fighter, and it was a shock, right? Like, nobody could believe it. And I'm walking out of the arena, and the reporter wrote, he says, there he's playing with Rubik's Cube, talking to his mom, oblivious to what he just accomplished. Like, I was a child. It was normal. Like, the light switch would come on when a fight would come on. It was a whole different person. But my people we come from, fighting is a religion. My grandfather was a champion fighter. My great-grandfather, old Black Bob Williamson, was a great athlete. It goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. But if I didn't have that push and drive and the hard upbringing from my old father, I wouldn't be able to do what I've done today.
Where did you move from? And I know you're a traveler, and I'm going to get into that because that is super fascinating. But where are you from? Is that even a question you can ask a traveler?
Oh, yeah, yeah. All my people come from Scotland. We're the Scottish gypsy travelers. And my dad's side, my mom's an Irish gypsy traveler. So when my dad married my mom, the Scotch and Irish, that was like a shocker. Like, whoa, wait a minute. The orange and the green, a big mix up. And they produced a mutant like me. But I mean, then I'm up. Yes, I'm all both sides of my mom's and my dad's family. Was all in, you know, that's, we're proud gypsy traveler people. We're proud of our heritage. There's good and bad in all races of people, all over the world. Unfortunately, my people are stereotyped a different way, painted with a brush they should be painted with. If you look for good, you'll find good. If you look for bad, you'll find bad. But you got to know this here. In every race, there's good and bad. My people are good people. We're a great talent amongst our people, singing and dancing and fighting. That was the number one thing, but they don't show it. Family members can sing better than anybody you hear on the radio. And they won't do it. They won't come out and do it. Just keep a low profile. Because we're used to being persecuted real bad. To this day, in England, there's places and bars and pubs. No tinkers or pikeys allowed. That's what they call the African-American man the N-word. Now think about that this day and age, 2024. This very day.
When I lived in the UK, I heard the word pikey and I was like, oh, what's that? It sounds like something from like, you know, the Middle Ages. I just assumed it was like a word for knight or something like that. I was in a bar and I said to this girl that I worked with, we were lawyers at the time. I said, what's a pikey? Like really loud. Cause I was like, I've heard this word and nobody, and somebody told, and John said it and they were like, shh. Right. Cause we're in a pub just drinking.
Yeah, those...
And I didn't realize that this was like a slur at all. And I said, what? Pikey's a bad word? Yeah. And like, you know, probably had a couple of beers and I was just like, it can't be that bad. It doesn't sound like a bad word.
There,
the bartender's like looking at me like, is this guy really just like saying that at full volume? And there were guys at the back table looking at us. And my friend was like, just stop talking now. Just stop. We'll just tell you at the office on Monday what this is all about.
Oh my gosh.
And it turns out, as you mentioned, that is not a word that most polite people just say at full volume when they're having a beer.
Exactly.
And this is like a nice pub where lawyers hang out, right? It's like in the Canary Wharf of London. It'll bust that out there. But travelers, it's such an interesting culture, man, because first, you said gypsy traveler, but I read on the internet, which is the arbiter of all truth, that gypsy's not exactly the word that you should use either for this. Now, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but it's not something I should say.
Unfortunately, like gypsy, we'll take that one better than any other word, but that's what we are. It goes back to the Romani gypsy people when they ventured off to Scotland, Ireland, England. And there's English traveler gypsies, and there's Scottish Irish gypsies, and Scottish Irish gypsies. And that's what my people are, Scotch and Irish. We're all the one people. We got different words we use. We speak a whole different languages. I can speak them all. You know, we're good people, good, hardworking people, a lot of them. And we're very proud people.
So just to give the listeners a little bit of a recap, because I did a little bit of research on this, I guess the reason people say gypsies is because people, I don't know, hundreds of years ago actually thought that your people, your tribes or whatever you call it, had moved from Egypt.
Yeah.
And that was actually not always the case. They come from India/Scotland/Irish.
It's hard to say. Even the Bible says the lost tribe. You know, we don't know what tribe that is. I mean, I do know this here. It's hundreds and hundreds of years of traditions and culture. They're good people, a lot of them, you know, but I mean, it's like this here. In every race, Latinos, Orientals, you know, the white, African, there's good and bad in every race. But my people, you only hear about the bad.
Well, yeah.
But they don't ever talk about the good things they've done. Like Tyson Fury, look what that man has done. He's an undisputed world champion. He come back from things that they read him off, addictions, that he overcome it, and he's top of the world. And you know this, when he won the world heavyweight title in England, the queen wouldn't even honor him.
Because he was a traveler and she thought it was kind of trashy?
He was asked to leave a restaurant, Jordan, with his wife 5 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Because we don't serve your kind here. Honest to God. I've been told that.
I'm shocked.
He told me and my wife in Orlando, Florida, walking to Disney World 10 years ago, my little girl, we know your people. No, we know, you have to leave the park, sir. I said, what?
Wait, where is this?
In Orlando, Disney World.
They kicked you out of Disney World?
Yes,
because
they did. We know your people. We do not want you.
That's horrible.
And my wife was so embarrassed. I was like, what? So just come on. She said, come on. Now, honest to God, Jordan, you know your stuff. He does too. When you know our people, you know the background. A lot of people are oblivious to like, what's he even talking about? But yes, they have said that to me. I've been in world championship fights, brother. And you know what? I don't care about a cut nose. I'll fight and my nose hanging off. A little cut my nose, referee jump in and grab me and say, go back to America now, you gypsy bastard. My hand to God.
Unbelievable.
Brother, names like that, it's hurt me all my life. Growing up, I was deprived of a lot of things for being a gypsy traveler. You're stamped with the birth.
This is quite shocking because, first of all, 90% of America is probably like, I think I've heard of gypsies. Aren't those the people that read your future in a crystal ball or something? Like, it's very, but like, no one's like, oh, kick them out of Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very rare. And like, I know that traveler culture is somewhat nomadic and there's all these different rules and things like that. There's a specific culture and religion, but I really thought that prejudice against travelers was like something from the 50s and sort of had calmed down with the civil rights movement, but apparently not, because Mike Tyson only gets kicked out of restaurants because he doesn't pay the bill. Like, you're getting kicked out of the Tyson Fury is getting kicked out because he's a traveler. Yeah, it's a totally different thing. It's unbelievable, man.
You know something, Jordan? Unfortunately, in this world, racism and hatred is something that will always be here. You just kind of got to roll the punches and move around it. All we can do is try our best to not don't get involved with it, but to change it. Here's the problem. Okay, if someone's full of hate and they're rotten, you're not going to change them. Let them fade out.
Because
you only get yourself aggravated. Someone assaults you, you're a fool to argue back with them. Just move on.
One of your languages, I know you speak like five. One of them is called Kant, which is Scottish Kant. I thought they, I'm sure there's a joke in here, but it's like Kant because you can't understand what anyone is saying when they speak it. This is kind of like almost like Celtic sort of OG pre-English stuff that y'all speak. I mean, it goes way back centuries. It's really interesting.
I'll give you a laugh about the Kant, okay? My boy was training in a gym. He's boxing this little guy. He's only a baby. The African, the black guy, the old trainer, is a good guy. Remember, I'm speaking Kant to my boy. I says, Fikim Shan. That means get him good. Fikim Shan is, come on, Bobby. And I'm walking to the gym, and the old man, wait a minute, Bobby, I thought his name was Fikim Shan.
Yeah, Fikim Shan. It's so interesting. I should do a whole show about traveler lifestyle because the history is fascinating. The lifestyle is fascinating. I know y'all have a lot of rules and different things that are almost kind of secretive, but let's get back to fighting for now. And if we have more time, we can talk more about the traveler. It's so freaking interesting to me. Tell me how your dad trained you. I know we sort of covered that you were fighting drunks in parking lots at age 11. Were you waking up in the middle of the night to do that? Because I know I'm in bed by like 9:30 on an ideal night because I got two little kids.
Yeah, unfortunately, those nights my dad would be probably drinking. We'd be in an old motel or an RV trailer and he pulled back up, the lights would be on high beams. And that's when you knew, you know, something was wrong. Mom, she says, she would let him sleep. Don't do this. Oh, Jackie, get him out, Jackie, get him out. Come on, jolly here. That means come here. Packer the gadget. That means beat up the man. That was it. Hey, him? I'm not fighting him. Oh, you're sick as shit. And the wee boy, buzzsaw, busts this one up. And this one laying like this, in front of the bumper, like this. Hey, old man. And he said this word. I know it sounds crazy, but he said to me, what a right wee gadget. That means, what a right wee man. When he would say that, it took away all the craziness. Because my dad, he showed me the love. It sounds weird to tell you that, but it was my life. And I love my old man. And I thank God for his craziness. His training methods, Jordan, was insane.
Yeah.
At nighttime, a black and white TV set. an old videotape. I'm talking when everybody else had color TVs. We were living rough, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Watch a fight film. Maybe the film be 20 minutes, but him make me watch it for 3 and 4 hours. And me shadow boxing, copying the fight film, pouring the sweat off me. And it would sit like this behind you. No, do it that way. When you got the fight move all done, oh, come here, why are we champ? Boy, what are we champ? Say a towel, write me off. Now go to your bed. 5 in the morning. Come on, up, up. Run. And follow the car behind you and beep the horn on your ass if you wasn't going fast enough. And made the run 2, 3, 4 mile runs that we bore.
He's following you with a car and yes, honking at you and you're just running?
You better run me over, Jordan. I had to run. You know what I mean? So I was terrified. You know, he was tough. But you understand, he was a killer street fighter. I mean, he was rough and tumble. See, Jordan, I was fair and square. I done rough and tumble too, my more share. Rough and tumble. That means anything goes. In a real street fight, I'm not talking about MMA's rules and a street fight. I bite your nose, your ear right off your head because you're going to do it to me. There's no rules. Them fights are evil.
Oh, my God.
I did more of them. I share them. I don't like them. I didn't do a fair and square deal. But my father, that was his life, them fights. And he mastered them moves and how to do things. Like, even to this day, these guys don't do none of the stuff that my dad could do. There's little moves they do. And he was tough that way.
Your upbringing, most people can't relate, right? Your dad would wrap the baseball bat with duct tape and what was it, like a t-shirt or something?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Whack you in the belly with it and make you run in front of the car. It's just like, this is such a, I'll say, unique way to show love for your son, I suppose. But it makes sense in context of him being also raised like that. And just when you look at your community, the best fighter is the guy with the most respect in a lot of ways. And so you're the king of the hill, and he wanted that for you because that was what was important. That's what I'm hearing anyway. Is that accurate?
He has been training brothers. You know, we were painting roofs, metal roofs, in the summertime, spraying roofs, and the buckets weigh 60 pounds, 5 gallon buckets. And he made me pick a bucket with my teeth or a rag, like that, 60 pounds like that, and then take a bucket on my shoulder. I show you today.
Gosh.
And do duck walks, stuff that ain't normal. But here's why it wasn't normal, because it goes against all normal things that someone could do. Balance your muscles that never been used like that before. And truthfully, he's a guru, okay? He's hard trained. He wouldn't sell this day and age. The Marines wouldn't take him on, okay?
Yeah.
To do that business, he molded me. I was bred and born to be this person that he made me.
Let me back up the truck a little bit. Because I'm not even sure where to begin with the underground fight scene, because it is absolutely nuts. So this is bare-knuckle boxing, and that is different from other kinds of underground street fights, which obviously I had no idea before reading the book and talking to you. Can you explain a little bit the difference between regular boxing, bare-knuckle boxing, and you said...
Rough and tumble?
Yeah, rough and tumble, where you can just like rip someone's nose off.
Rough and tumble fight, that's just a street fight. I mean, I had over 100 of those. They're not good, but I mean, anything goes. There's no rule book. There's no rule book in a street fight. You know, that's bad business. But fair and square means, Jordan, let's say me and you're going to fight, Jordan. Now, how much money are you putting up, Jordan, to fight this fight? You want to challenge me? You're putting $5,000? Okay, I got to match the $5,000. Winner take all, Jordan. You can't go home and lose there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to win that money or you lose everything.
Right.
Now, in pro boxing, there's a price already guaranteed for the fighter, win, lose, or draw. And it's through managers. But these underground fights, that's how they're run. But I'm going to blow your mind here right now. The underground fights were better, fair play, what I mean by fair, right down the middle, than the professional boxing was. Pro boxing, I was world champion there. That's a racket, man. The game ain't the fight game it used to be. More corruption and fixed deals than the judges, the doctors, and referees. I never seen that in bare-knuckle boxing. Believe it or not, that underground horror scene, at them fights, Jordan, I seen judges, attorneys, and police officers in with gang members, and one night everybody's in one harmony betting on a fight. Honest to God, you can't believe this. And everybody leaves. But these fights happen, Jordan, and they happen all the time, all through North America, all through here. And I remember one time I was fighting in a building right next to a grocery store. I mean, there's a bloodbath. There's newspapers on the floor drying the blood up. Can you imagine somebody walking the next aisle, maybe an old grandmother or granddaughter?
Oh, my God.
Oblivious to this world, a wall. That's how close it is. We did one fight, Jordan. There was a fight, a medical fight. Across from me was a police station. They were oblivious to what was going on right across the street.
I mean, maybe they knew and they just didn't care because the chief was over there with the district attorney with a bunch of guys they arrested the week prior who are out on bail.
It's insane. I mean, it happens that the underground circuit was here before I was here. I mean, you go back to the movies like Charles Bronson, Hard Times. You ever see that movie, Charles Bronson, Hard Times? He's a bare knuckle fighter in the 30s.
Yeah, like when I was 9 or something, probably on TV.
Fighting all, they were doing it, but it's just been going on for years. Even though now the sport is sanctioned, there's the professional bare knuckle boxing, but there's still underground world, and it's still thriving. It'll be here when I'm dead and gone.
The book just has tons of stories about you go into a trailer park, and then there's a fight in there. There's like a parking lot where they set this up, and really, it's like straight out of a movie. And
no.
It's like a dumb thing for me to say right now, but it seems so dangerous that I just can't imagine. Because you also mentioned in some of the bare knuckle matches, if somebody just gets really pissed off or they're losing, they just start breaking the rules. And it's like, well, okay. I mean, now it's a rough and tumble fight. All right, my bet's already out. It's like, you don't have any guarantee that somebody's going to not try to kill you.
So I'm sorry, my throat. Anyway, I fight this guy, this black dude. He was up for the Jamaica Bloods, gangs of New York. I dropped him. I beat him up. He was a big, big guy. He had long dreadlocks. And he bit me in the shoulder. He already, he already lost the fight legally. I had him knocked out quite. Bang! I hit him right hand. He was out cold. That was it. Anyway, get him up. They want to go again. See, I didn't know what this meant, though. See, when, go again, that now it went from fair and square to rough and tumble. You understand how he turned on me? He said, you want to come in?
Yeah.
I was doing a fair and square move. He comes in, he bites me right there. So I bit him back. I should have done it, but I had to bite him back. Anyway, so it ended pretty quick. But anyways, fair play to them, though. My guys are all there, all the guys in New York. I thought a big riot was going to happen, but it slowed down. I said, come on, pal, shake hands. I shook his hand, and that was it. But I've had guns put on my head, and that's what got, that was the one I really thought I was dead.
Jeez. I have heard that bare-knuckle strikes penetrate deeper, so you have to hit less hard because you don't want to break your hand, first of all. So it's almost like
100%.
With regular boxing, you just basically like torture somebody because you're beating them with this pad at 80% and you hit them 100 times.
You're very intelligent, right? You said there. That's what I've been telling people for years. Honest to God, you take my hand in pro boxing, you wrap it now with gauze and tape. It's like a cast. You put that little 10-ounce glove on like this, and he puts that glove. And they call cutting the glove. They don't tell you it's not illegally. They pull back the glove like this, they squeeze it, and they take the laces, they make that leather tighter. Now it's whap, you hit hard as you can.
Mm.
That's more damage to the head and the brain. Now take that glove all the way. It's a naked hand. I'm not going to hit as hard. I got to pick my shots. 40% power. Maybe 50. I don't very rare hit somebody hard. Or at least it's the stomach. Pop. I knock many men with body shot out. You know, I drop them. But I don't want to hurt my hands if I don't have to. But boxing, I think, is way more dangerous than bare knuckle fighting. And here's a fact for you, my brother. In bare knuckle boxing, I think there's only been two fighters that actually killed that they can count for. And life, even an underground scene, what boxing, what is it, 25, 30 fighters a year die? And MMA fighters, think about that, that's a lot of numbers.
From brain damage and stuff like that? Yeah, that's the thing, is like, over time, if you get hit a few, well, it's never good to get knocked out by getting punched in the face or whatever, that's never good, but, I mean, we all saw what happened to Muhammad Ali, right? I mean, that was, we don't need more of that. That was brutal.
See, I was raised the old school, too, how to try to roll the punches. The art of fighting. And I had the best trainers, my dad, but I trained with the greatest trainers that ever lived. And I took everything that asked me how to slip and roll a punch. And that's what saved me in the game, being able to do that.
That makes sense, right? So even if you're like, oh, I'm not going to be able to stop this hit, at least I'm not going to let it connect really well.
Believe me, I mean, I've been hitting some good shots. Don't be wrong. But I mean, 90% of fights, I'm protected. I roll. See, your body is a, it ain't just this, your whole body, your shoulder, the hand. In bare knuckle boxing, I can do this. I catch. See, you throw punches, right? I'll catch here, Jordan. I'll catch here, side. Bop, bop, bop. In boxing, I can't do that because my hand is kind of tied up with the glove and the hand wraps. I can't really protect myself like I can in bare knuckle boxing. It's a different world. It's a different world. I've seen bum bare knuckle fighters, Jordan, knock out world contenders and boxing champions in an underground street fight.
I believe that because they're used to being able to take a few punches or get lined up. But if you just take one bare knuckle punch, I saw a video of you that you texted me where that really big dude, you kind of just like tapped him in the eye. It didn't even look like it was that hard. You told me later it wasn't that hard because you didn't want to blind the dude. And he went down. He was like squealing like a pig. And I was like, oh, man, that definitely hurt a lot. And that was the end of the fight.
His eye socket right there, Jordan. You take, you see my hand here, right? Most boxers, they punch like that. Bare knuckle, I'll take these two knuckles right here.
The bottom two knuckles?
I'll sit back and I'll just turn it. Boom. Boom. And that real sharp, pop, right in the eye. His eye socket broke right there. Excruciating pain. That's what happened to poor fella. He went down. And I feel bad for him. But, you know, I did what I did. I mean, that's sort of...
That's the sport.
I had to do it. And I had to win because I had to try to help my family the best I can.
Yeah, of course. I think it was probably one of the most humane things that I'd seen. It certainly looked like after that he was done. You didn't kick him in the head or anything like that. I mean, that was the end of the fight. And he went home and he patched himself up. But yeah, he probably doesn't have brain damage. He wasn't knocked out. He was just hurt. I'd rather break my eye socket than get smashed in the head 48 times during a fight that I maybe won.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of these fighters, if I see they're hurt and bare knuckle, I could do a lot more damage. A lot more, but I don't. It's a body. I like to do the... I don't want to hurt no one if I don't have to. But there were some fights I was in, and I fought people that were bad, evil bastards. They tried to do me in. I mean, a sinister agenda they had from the beginning. There's some people are rotten. I never had that. See, Jordan, a proper fighting man, right? A proper fighting man is a good man. It's a heart. A proper fight man ain't a bully. I'm a bully slayer. I don't like bullies. If I have a dollar in my pocket, I'll give it to you. I take my shirt back, put on you if you're cold. That's how I am a man. Because God gives to those who give. But a bully, if you look at their life, they're constantly targeting someone, putting someone down because they're jealous of someone. And they pretend to be a bully and a good person. And I've dealt with a lot of them in my life. But sometimes I fought some bullies. And they're the ones that, you know, they really deserve a good beating.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Bobby Gunn. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored in part by Storyworth. My mom is 82, and despite her quiet demeanor, she has some incredible adventures from her youth. When she was young, she went to Japan. She lived there for a while. She worked in Australia back when women basically didn't travel much at all. We discovered these captivating stories through Storyworth, which sends her thought-provoking questions each week, like, hey, what's the most valuable lesson you've learned in your life? Or tell me about a time you really felt proud of yourself. We help select these questions, aiming to bring out rich, engaging stories. And the process is really simple. My mom replies to these emails with stories, long or short, without any stress. I receive these responses throughout the year, reliving known stories and hearing new ones for the first time, each a hidden gem. And after a year, Storyworth compiles all the narratives and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book, something our family can cherish for generations. We created one last year and display it prominently as both a conversation starter and kind of a nostalgic treasure. Storyworth isn't just a gift, it's a lasting legacy, celebrated by families and highly rated with over 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot. I think this is a great gift.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Jordan. That's storyworth.com/Jordan to save $10 on your first purchase.
This episode is also sponsored by Ramp. If you want to streamline your business finances from expenses to accounting, then you need to look into Ramp. Ramp is a corporate card and spend management software that saves you time and money, and Ramp offers unparalleled control over your company's spending. It allows you to issue cards to employees with specific limits, and it automates expense reporting so you're never going to have to chase down a receipt again. Ramp's system automatically collects and categorizes receipts in real time, which means no more hours wasted on expense reports. This can help you close your books up to 8 times faster. Not only does Ramp streamline processes, but it also cuts costs. Businesses typically save an average of 5% in their first year using Ramp. It's also a breeze to set up and use. Whether you have 5 employees or 5,000, you can start using Ramp with full functionality in about 15 minutes. Give Ramp a try. I sure wish I had this in one of my old businesses. We had expenses just going out of control. It was hard to manage. It was hard to monitor. And by the time we were reconciling everything, half the people that abused the expense thing were gone. This would have saved us a ton of time and money.
And now get $250 when you join Ramp. Just go to ramp.com/Jordan. That's ramp.com/Jordan. ramp.com/Jordan. Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank. Members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're wondering how I managed to book all these amazing folks for the show, all these authors, thinkers, creators, bare-knuckle boxers every single week, it's because of my network, the circle of people I know, like, and trust. And I'm teaching you how to build your network for free over at 6MinuteNetworking.com. This course is about improving your relationship-building skills. It is not cheesy or awkward. It is not cringy. It is down-to-earth. Just practical exercises that are going to make you a better connector, a better colleague, a better friend, and a better peer. 6 minutes a day is all it takes, and many of the guests on the show subscribe and contribute to the course. So come on and join us. You'll be in smart company where you belong.
You can find the course at 6minutenetworking.com. Now, back to Bobby Gunn.
It must be, I don't know if this is the right way to phrase it, it probably feels pretty good to hit a real bastard in the face as opposed to a guy who's just trying to feed his family. Like, it's a totally different feeling.
I love you. Yeah, it feels good to do it. Listen to me. Here's the deal. Some of them are bad. And I told a story to save me up before. One time I fought this guy. Some of these guys that fight in the underground, they're good people, Jordan. They're fighting for their families.
Yeah.
You know, and I fought this guy one time, and he came up to fight. He was like a big old room like this in El Mar. We're boxing, fighting. He put $5,000 to fight. I put $5,000. I was up with $5,000 or $10,000. It was winner take all. And he's giving me a good old go. He's fighting me. He runs over the window. Looks at the window. He comes back at me. He's fighting me. And he does it 3 or 4 times. And I'm thinking, I said, I hope this bastard got like a gang downstairs. You know, come in, raid us here, try to rob us. Anyway, so Jordan, he looks out the window again. He comes to me. I hit him right in. Boom. He knocked out. He gets up and he was crying, Jordan. But I don't mean crying like whimpering. Tears running in his eyes like that. When I walked out, he had 3 babies in a car. He didn't have the money. I get nobody to watch them. He borrowed the money to fight me. He really thought he was going to win. I was game. Listen, that game enough now. He come like a proper man to fight. You know, he thought he was going to win. So I give him back his money.
Oh, wow.
I was heartbroken. I feel bad for him. What I'm trying to say to you is that these guys are in the fight game. They're fighting for what the better life their kids. And there's a lot of heartbreaks in America and everywhere in the world. There's things going on behind people's, they're oblivion, man. Like this office building right now. There might be a bare knuckle fight next year. We don't even know about it.
Yeah.
You don't know. But it's there. And everybody in there are trying to benefit for something. You know, it's all about money. That's all it's about, to make a better life for everybody.
It's a bit of a sad state of affairs where somebody who has kids and can't afford to have somebody watch them has to borrow money to go fight and put their body up against, you know, somebody like you. Because if they don't, they're not going to be able to pay for the food that or their rent or whatever. Like that is, yeah. I wonder, how do you know if you're going into some basement in the Bronx, how do you know you're not walking into like a trap where they're going to rob you or they're going to say, you throw this next fight or we're going to shoot you right now? Like, I don't know. I mean, you're dealing with underworld stuff, right?
Well, listen, okay, I goes to fight this guy, right? And I swear to God, Jordan, I thought he had a sweater on. He walks from, is that Harry? The George Hamilton, I thought he had a sweater on, okay? Big bastard he was. God, he smelled too, though, God. Oof. Must have been the hair of the old, I don't know what it was, but anyway, a lawnmower, Jordan, he should have got a lawnmower to clean it down before he fought me. But anyways, we're fighting, and he's doing a lot of things he shouldn't do, because I think it was a subo, some kind of word they use in Russia. It's like
sambo, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, he slammed me down the ground. I get up, I'm banging away. Anyway, I hit him, long story short, back, his eye came out of his head here, and I was hanging just like that, the eye socket busted. He goes out in excruciating pain. The kid, his handler, long story short, gets to get around my head of my story. The kid flipping out on him. No, he's down for, bro, he's down. I just count him out. Just because the fight's over.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even count him out.
What?
Then finally it's done. And the kid puts a gun to my head. Now, just so you know, walking into this place, it was in New York, like a mansion. They had pet leopards, Jordan.
What?
Pet leopards, chains and wall. It was insane. That's how I say, you can't understand this, pal. They were doing things they shouldn't be doing. It was insane, brother.
Clearly.
There'd be no authorities around at all. Okay? Millionaire people, too.
Yeah.
Mafia people. I don't want to mention it. But anyways, long story short, the old man in the background, I guess he was a hit. He would put that down. He said, pay that boy's money.
Wow.
Honest to God. And I'm walking to that room, Jordan. My good friend, Mike Normile, was with me. Remember he told you? He says in Irish, our Jills is carved. Now, that means we're dead in Irish Canada. Our Jills is carved. And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Walking out, Jordan. Any moment, I said, lights out. Bang, I'm shot. I get to the old truck with the money, and I'm driving. That was pretty well the end of it for me. I got out of that world. I was sort of probably my last underground fight, was it? It was my last fight. I asked, you know, I said, listen, I'm a champ. I've been a champion underground for 11 years. I beat everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody they brought in front of me. The Underground Association, the underground fights, the toughest guys you want to fight, Oriental, Puerto Ricans, African, all. I beat everybody they brought in front of me for 11 years. And I said, okay. Get out on good means you can walk away, no problem. I said, I'm going to tell my story.
Yeah.
I said, okay, God bless you. You've done more than we can ever imagine. I shook hands. I gave them all a hug. I wanted to wait for that world because, Jordan, I'm telling you, my pal, I thought I was going to get killed that day.
Yeah. I mean, once people have pets that usually run free in the jungle, you know you're with some cartel mafia guys for sure. Like, normal people, don't keep lions. You saw that Netflix. None of those people are sane, right?
Right there should have been a red flag should have went off right there. I walked in.
Like,
that ain't a pit bulldog. I mean,
no, like, all right, fine. I might fight dudes in trailer parks and parking lots, but you got a leopard chained to the wall. I'm out of here. This is just crazy. No, some of the moves, man, especially in the street fight stuff, it's just crazy. I mean, you talk about ripping off ears. The book, Staten does a very good job of going into detail about how you put your thumbs in someone's mouth to rip their face open. I mean, it's gross, man.
My dad taught me that.
Yeah.
You know, a fish hook.
Yuck.
I watched my old man do that to a man one time.
That's got to keep you up at night.
Oh, my God. The man's lips were to his ears.
But, okay, so it goes without saying, though, man, this is not usually legal at all. Maybe there's some places where it is. Maybe you go to Dubai and they're like, okay, it's fine. But I assume people pay, what, a cover to watch? Or do you have to gamble if you go in? Like, how does that work?
Well, underground fights are, yeah, you're not supposed to have them.
Right.
But they pay usually about $100 at the door, each person to come to the door.
Okay.
Now, I've had fights where there's 500 people in there. Maybe more. I should think about that. That's a big gate.
Yeah.
And then plus the money the fighter's putting on. And whoever's backing the fighter, you know, what group of families back the fighter, they usually put the... How it works, Jordan, if I'm being backed by a group of family, I put down $50,000 and he puts $50,000 down. The truth is I probably get 20 out of that.
Okay.
You understand? Because remember, they're still getting a massive amount of money. They're getting that full in too. Remember, it's winner take all.
Right.
So you got to win. You got to win to come home right.
So a lot of the gangs and gambling is all obviously mafia affiliated. I mean, you're talking about Chinatown. Is this in the 90s? Tell me what it's like with the different mafias and different cultures, right? Like you kind of mentioned the triads and the Yakuza are just totally quiet, which is really creepy somehow during an underground fight, right? Unless they're clapping.
But yeah, Jordan, listen though. Again, I had a couple institutes. A couple of situations took out of hand went crazy. But that really ain't a lot. For consider how many fights I've had. All them people that are stereotyped, oh, bad, kill you. They were more better, nicer to you. They give you your money. The professional boxing world, pal, is more corrupted.
I believe that.
Way more than the underground world. And that's a fact. So I'm trying to say, all these bad guys, these stereotypes, these killers, the mob, they're good men. Probably they do you a favor. We'll give you something you need it. Go ask these guys in the boxing world, wouldn't give you a quarter. And you put your life on and fight for them. Overall, the underworld was a better world than the legal world for boxing, I think, but there are pros and cons and everything. There's some crazy situation I was in, but in general, I'm saying to you, for the situation I was in bad, the good situation overshadowed that. I had so many times I was in places that they could have killed me, Jordan. They could have.
Yeah.
And they took it on the chin, but they took it on the chin. One man by myself, many a fight, I walked in by myself, Jordan. No one behind me. I walked in by myself. 300 men in that room. And then I did the fight. I walk in proud. And I walk out proud. I'm a man. See, a lot of the women and my people, the gypsy travelers, they love up Dalton dolls, they call them. And they'll play. It's like, my mother had a fortune, like $10,000 of little figurines. And they're worth a lot of money today. I wish I had, they'd be worth $100,000, but I sold them years ago. But mom, she loved this. And mom was dying. She got sick in Canada. She fell, Jordan, a young woman, going to bingo. And she come out of the bingo, and she went to stop me at some donuts and coffee to come home to dad and me, you know. We didn't know. We had no cell phones back then. This is the late 80s, you know. And she fell on black ice. When she fell, she hit her head in the ground, and she laid there.
Oh, man.
You ever see somebody in a movie, like, they'll stick their tongue on a cold piece of metal, and then it sticks? Well, her wee face stuck to the ice.
Oh, man.
She broke her hip and everything. She couldn't get up. She was roaring and screaming for maybe an hour laying there. Screaming. Finally, they come, and they put hot water, got her face all burnt. And they give my mother bad blood, Jordan. They didn't screen it right.
Oh, no.
It went like a cancer. It went out of her body. She fought hard. But we're in America now. I'm getting her the best medical help I can get her in Pittsburgh. All of her stuff was in the wee van. I had a van. I went down to the box of the trailer. But long story short, I got a fight going on. I had a bare knuckle fight to help my mom. But I was scared. Was this the story that they broke the van? You tell me.
Just to finish the Pittsburgh story, Bobby's mother was in the hospital. Bobby needed more money to help pay for her surgery. He pretended to have the money. He was training in a boxing gym. The fighter saw his promise, asked him, hey, are you interested in making some cash in an underground fight tonight? He came back, pretended to have the money in a duffel bag. He didn't have it all. they brought in a big guy and Bobby beat him and took the cash, was able to help give it to his mom. That booker, Johnny Varelli, the answer to segue, then started booking Gunn in more fights and said, hey, you're good at this. And it was an underground network. Look, in all my years as a journalist, this is the most amazing story I've ever come across. Bobby's a true underdog tale, a real life Rocky. I think what's incredible, though, he's a guy who's fighting for his family. And when I met him initially in 2012, he was fighting to put his seven-year-old daughter through private school. I went with them. I saw him drop her off. And what really struck me, Jordan, was he said, you know, I'm not as scared about these fights. The one thing that scares me the most is when I drop off my daughter, Charlene, her friends and parents will find out what I do and judge her for it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really telling and powerful. But the underground circuit has been around, as I detail, for hundreds of years. It's pretty fascinating. If you look into the history of the United States, going back to the 18th century, Tom Molyneux, an enslaved person in Virginia, won so much money for his master in plantation bouts that he won his freedom and went to New York, worked as a dock worker, and then traveled across to England and won fame fighting overseas. You have stories of various underground fighters, most famously John L. Sullivan, who is the classic mustachioed strongman. If you think about this, he was the LeBron of the 1800s. I mean, he was the son. It's always been a sport for people who are in the most dire circumstances to raise themselves up. He was the son of an Irish immigrant plumber, was walking by a storefront in Boston, saw an ad for anyone to come in and take this guy down. He took him down, then became extremely famous across the world, met Teddy Roosevelt later in life, traveled in the Wild West circuit under Wild Bill Hickok. His breakfast was oysters and whiskey.
Very Irish.
And, you know, it had like these really famous fights that were covered by national news in the 1800s. With the rise of religion and social mores, and especially the gambling. The gambling's always been central to bare-knuckle boxing.
I see.
It really was deemed unsavory. This is not correct with our Victorian values. And that's when you saw with John L. Sullivan, he famously beat Jake Kilrain, whose descendant later actually was a Navy SEAL and ran NATO, and would cite his heritage in bare-knuckle boxing as a testament to his toughness. Sullivan beat Kilrain in a fight in the late 1800s, was covered around the world, but got such backlash, authorities tried to chase him and arrest him. Boxing then came up in its place. You know, again, it's more savory to watch, but it's 10 times the amount of damage to the brain. A good analogy is rugby versus NFL. We can all watch NFL with our kids on Sunday afternoon. You don't see blood much. It's pretty sanitary, but those guys can hit each other with extreme amounts of velocity impact and obviously do serious concussion damage. Rugby, by comparison, just like bare knuckle, barely any pads. It's bloody. Skin on skin is bloody, but those guys, studies show, don't suffer the same amount of CTE damage. And early studies so far in bare-knuckle boxing, especially with the legal rise of it, do show, look, none of this is safe, obviously, right? This is violent. But it does show, so far, less concussive damage. And I think what's interesting about the underground, though, and what was fascinating, Bobby was saying, he was coming up in this in the 80s, 90s, early aughts. No cell phones. When I first met him, I went to Ike and Randy's gym in Paterson, New Jersey. Walked through a chain. This is not Bally's, you know, this is not Equinox. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a place where you better know somebody.
Like, I mean, I was walking through a chain link fence, past a couple of pit bulls, down and through metal doors. This low slung, cramped space used to be an auto body shop. And there was an old landline phone in Ike and Randy's gym in Paterson, about the size of a toaster. And that's where Bobby would get called. So Bobby would come into the gym. And, you know, be like, yo, Bob, someone left you a message. It would be tacked on a wall, gun, it'd be a phone number. And that's where the Russian mob would call him, the Latin kings, the Jamaicans, the Irish. Everybody knew sooner or later, Bobby Gunn's going to show up at this gym. And that's what we'll call it. And you told me you one time met the Russian mobsters that came to Starbucks nearby to work out a deal to fight in their mansion fight.
Oh, God, yeah. It was insane. That little phone was the main thing. Remember the movie Rocky? How do I call you? You'll call me. It was weird. I mean, that's it, that little phone. That's where all the big fights come from. Word of mouth. Secret society. Nobody rats one another out. They all want to see it.
No, that makes sense.
So that's why they're not telling the wrong people about it, because they're telling the good people. They all want to come and see it. But let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
It's like the forbidden fruit. Everybody's attracted to see bare fist fighting. Mostly, they want to watch that more than the glove. It shouldn't be done. It's forbidden and attracts them. And that's the good selling point to it. You know,
sure.
Now it's sanctioned that, but to me, it was just the truest form of combat.
My first fight, I was working as a writer at GQ and met Bobby Gunn, and he was across the river in New Jersey. And I said, I want to go to a fight. I get a text, just it was an address. I left my office in Manhattan, you know, right there in Times Square, went to the address, was then texted again to another address. None of these locales are given in the book. That was a deal. But I show up to basically a parking lot. It's lightly raining.
Yeah.
Bobby Gunn walks out in a black sleeve t-shirt with a baseball bat.
Alrighty.
Slung across his shoulder. And then David Feldman, who is now the founder of Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship and was a longtime partner and promoter with Bobby in underground fights, basically came up and said, if I ever put his name in anything connected with this, I'd never write again. Because it was illegal.
Sure.
I saw a Hell's Angel and a Marine fight in a back room of an abandoned gym.
Okay.
And it was the sound. It was the sound of skin on skin. It's just this, it's just this wet slap. It's visceral. And the person next to me turned to me and said, you know, this shit's cool because it's illegal. It was the whole aura and essence and going to these fights. The fights weren't typically long. It was wild. And that was my introduction to the underworld.
You have to see it, Jordan, in person to really appreciate it. Well, a film is good, but in person, it's that atmosphere, that sound.
I would love to see something like this in person. I'm going to text Staten after this and be like, all right, next time I go to New York, I'm going to go to Chinatown with a pack of cigarettes and some aviator shades and watch one of these matches. The visceral thing I totally get, right? Like, you ever see one of those videos online where somebody falls and their head hits the pavement and you just know that's a head hitting pavement? I also understand the appeal of looking at something and seeing that it's illegal. I will say I went to a cockfight in the Philippines and it was really gross because they died. I didn't know they died.
Yeah.
I thought it was just like, I don't know what I thought. That was a little gross because it was animal abuse. I wasn't really down for that. But there is a thrill of being doing something like that's just kind of like, hey, this is illegal, but everybody here is doing it for a reason. Nobody's being forced into it, I guess. Although it's arguable, right? If the guy who's got three kids in the backseat of his car is really doing this instead of doing construction willingly, I don't know.
Yeah, you know what it is, though, too, Jordan? Sometimes somebody just can't get a break. Somebody just can't get a job.
Right.
They have to go through hard times. And what happens is, well, they'll get a job next week, but next week ain't paying for today's food for the kids.
I read in the book that your mom is also no stranger to beating some ass as well. There's an anecdote where she filled socks with pennies and then went and beat some woman.
And she was beautiful, too. She looked like a movie star. They called the Irish princess. You would never know. I mean, honest to God, the picture of my mother, like, wow. I never got the looks, you know what I mean? But mom was beautiful. She was a proper woman, a pure traveler woman.
It's such a heartwarming story, and which is a weird word to use for somebody who grows up in bare-knuckle underground fights knocking people's eyes out. But it's Staten did a really, really good job of telling your life story, and I mean, in my humble opinion.
Jordan, not only that, he put his life on the line.
Well, yeah, hanging out with you with the leopards chained to the wall.
One time, you were interviewing me, and they wanted to rob his cameras, the guys around me. I said, you can't do that. I said, no, that's my wee pal. You can't do that. Well, he'll get their freedom, man. We'll take. I said, they're not taking nothing. Brother, game enough now. There's a man right here. Honestly, he did a hell of a thing. He put himself in line, Jordan. And he did it because he knows that there's a good people that understand the truth of what is going on in the world. But to do what you done, brother, it's quite a journey, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was definitely nervous at times.
I bet.
It was fascinating. And honestly, seeing Bobby, you know, the other side of the traveler world, as he mentioned earlier, is their devotion to religion. So Bobby, you know, no drinking, no smoking, no tattoos, would lie prostrate on the ground in prayer before fights. A father putting his daughter through private school with the money. He's just a good guy. And, you know, that was really fascinating to me, Jordan, is, you know, the deeper I went with Bobby into this world, who would go into these dangerous places, who would endure these savage fights. But at the end of the day, he was a person with a good heart, you know, a father, and doing it for the right intentions, and a really gentle guy. I mean, he's got his little his little dog Max,
yeah,
you know, here today that he carries around him. Bobby has a big heart. And for somebody to see someone go through the kind of tribulations he has in his life and to still have that humanity that, yeah, at his core was really compelling.
Can I ask how your relationship was with your dad? Because it sounds like a tough upbringing, but it also sounds like he was trying to do right by you or for you in some ways. It's hard to tell.
He tried. My old man was a good man. My old man could have been a millionaire if he'd have done things differently in life. But his life was a hard upbringing. He's quite a man. I remember one time we're doing a job at work and painting a farm. And I guess the young farmer, somebody else done a bad job and we got the blame for it, right? So he pulled over like this. I'll never forget it. The old man was driving. He had a cigar in his belt, Jordan. And he had a sailor hat. You look weird, like a white sailor's hat. Some of you see it at Walmart. He's driving. I'll never forget it. Pull over this big guy. We're like, you know, crazy farmers, like big muscle, like throw bales of hay up. This big guy's, yeah, all I remember, like Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Right.
Yeah.
And the spinners.
The bushwhackers.
Oh, now. The old man, just 1 minute, son. He gets out. He points his finger at my father. He throws a punch at my father. Dad misses it. Now, he's got a cigar in his mouth, Jordan, okay? He jumps up in the air, something you don't heard of. So in the air, kicks to the chest, boom, knocks him back, rolls back with a cigar, gets on top of him and mounts him. Boom, boom, boom. This one's knocked out cold on a bumper like this. I can't believe it. He walks back to the truck. The cigar never left his mouth. He's still smoking. He goes, your old man still got it, don't he, kid? I said, that's my dad. That's why he was that superhero to me in different ways. I mean, that's my old man.
Bobby, tell him, but your dad is not done fighting. He's still fighting. He's almost 70. Bobby will have to go up to
82 years old. He was
82. I'm sorry. Wow. And you will, but the phone, you'll have to ring it once, hang up. Can you explain that situation?
One ring, hang up. Wait 5 seconds, call him back. Then he might answer.
Because people are looking for him.
Oh,
so he knows,
okay. I was like, why is this
going?
All happening? Now it makes sense.
Jordan, I'm sitting. I swear to God, this is 8 years ago. I was sitting at Thanksgiving, right? Phone call. Your dad's acted awful silly. He attacked the man here last day. I went, who did he attack? No, this should be a reverse rule. It should be me in trouble. I said, okay, who did he attack? The guy at the bar, he bit the man's neck like a vampire and hit the man right hand. I said, Dad, what? Oh, I'm just a poor, what do you think? The next morning, he's a poor innocent angel. I was just having a drink, watching a hockey game. The man attacked me, son. The truth was, okay, he attacked the man like a savage animal. The man was being smart with him. But what I'm saying to you, he would throw down. I watched my grandfather, my grandpa Jim. He was 84 years old. In front of the old hotel, the Ashbury Hotel, the dirty old hotel in Niagara Falls, a lot of the travelers will go there and stay there. Rough old hotel. I mean, Pim's, prostitution, drugs, right? Oblivious to that world. We just didn't bother it, but we knew it was there. Our trailer was parked right there. And one night, the old man went, what are you doing, Grandpa? He went, there's somebody out there trying to get in my trailer. I said, no. Okay. He runs out, the old man, and there's a young guy, and he hits him right in. Bang, bang, knocked him cold. The old man could fight. Put him out cold. The police come down. He did a citizen arrest. The older guy, because the old man had a bit of money in the trailer, I think. He's scared of somebody stealing. But that's it, buddy. Throw down a heartbeat. Fighting to us is bred into us.
In traveler culture, Jordan, it was interesting. Your ability to fight and defend your family name, it's a sense of honor. In a culture where there's not always a lot of material, home, wealth, that kind of thing, because it's an itinerant lifestyle, your ability to fight is representative of your family, of your clan, of your lineage. I thought it was interesting. Bobby told me a story, it's in the book, about how you beat up a person in a fight who I think your father,
your grandfather.
Yeah, you want to tell that story?
It was my dad.
And you were a kid.
Tampa, Florida, right? Now, my grandfather before that beat a man called John R. Robinson. He come to my grandfather's door. Grandpa was 59, 60 years old. And John R. was about 23 years old. He big up and coming, wanted to be a fighter. So two guys brought him to fight my grandpa. But actually, the guys that come with him, like, they should have done that. They come looking for the old man. And the old man had a name. You understand? That was wrong. You don't challenge a man that old to fight, you know? So he comes over, step out, Jim. I want to fight you right now. My uncle told me the story. He was right there. He says, okay, he says, let me finish my cup of tea. Not a bit worried at all. This is aggravating. I'll finish my tea. Oh, no problem. Close that door. He drinks his tea. And he told my granny, get me my trods out. That means your shoes, trods. She draws out this old box of shoes. He puts them on. He walks outside. And I mean, he blistered this one. He put him like, Grandpa Jim punched a piss right out of him, right? Put him in bits. Now, stop there. That happened. Grandpa beat him, an old man. That man, Grandpa beat, was a lot younger than Grandpa. Now, my dad in 1984 were in Florida. Billy Robinson, they called him. Billy Robinson was this man's son that my grandpa beat. You know, my grandpa beat the man, John R. Robinson. He had a boy called Billy. He groomed them and made them. Dad was sitting around. This one come to the trailer camp. few drinks, I'm looking at a little bit of trouble. Well, my father slaughtered him. I mean, dad just butchered him bad. I mean, put a bad beating on him. But he come looking for it. It was pretty degrading beating dad, give him, okay? And went back to his trailer in front of the man's wife, too. This is degrading in front of the family. But anyway, so at that 4 o'clock when he calls up grandpa in Canada. Oh, yeah. Who'd you stiffen? Abby's doctor, what I says. Well, I said, dad beat Robbins, right. Put him on the phone. But here's your granny, son. Did you get him good? Oh, good, she says, good. It's insane. That was it. But that's the God's truth. That's the God's truth. I said things happen by God, man.
And, you know, your son told me he watches the movie 300 a lot. And he said, I really identified with the Spartans. He's like, that's just our culture. We are just, a lot of people wouldn't understand it, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And that's true. And there's a story in the book. There's a lot of crazy fight stories, but maybe one of the most crushing stories in the book is when Bobby, I think a man was insulting you, another traveler. And so you went into his home at his dinner table in front of his family and called him outside, and the man wouldn't get up to stand and fight him. And that was the ultimate sense of shame that was bestowed upon him in that culture, because he wouldn't get up to fight. And it was the worst insult you could have done, as opposed to knocking him out.
The reason why I done that, because I'll tell you why, because I knew what he was. See, sometimes you have guys that want to announce a fight for a police officer, security, or in a shopping mall.
Right.
But a man who wants a fight, hey, my pal, let's walk over that field over there and have a little talk, me and you, okay? That's a fight. If I announce it in front of a movie theater, hey, I'll kill you stone dead. I don't really have any intention to fight. I'm a raver. There's a lot of ravers in the world. So what I done, I waited till he got, he had a little raving contest with me. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll see you later on, my boy. I'll see you later. I went right to his trailer in front of his kids. I walked in. I just let him know, I said, you have no intention. You're a cowardly bastard. And I told him the truth. And he crying. I walked out. Let him, he had to live with that the rest of his life. I'd cut my head off and die before I'd take a backstep. An old man born of a mother. I would take a backstep. I walk out the door to 10 Mike Tysons. Not one, because that's the way I am.
This is the Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Bobby Gunn. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Do you ever wish building a social life felt more like recharging your batteries instead of draining them? If so, BetterHelp might just be what you need. It's like having your own personal guide to help you navigate through the social labyrinth, helping you figure out what lifts you up and what weighs you down. BetterHelp is an incredible online platform that connects you with a licensed professional tailored to your specific needs. So imagine being able to access therapy from the comfort of your home or anywhere else you feel at ease. There's no need to stress about traveling to an office or squeezing sessions into some sort of packed schedule like we all have. Signing up is a breeze. You get paired with a counselor who understands your perspective and can help guide you towards a more energizing and satisfying social life. Plus, BetterHelp understands that life doesn't always operate on a 9-to-5 schedule. That's why they offer the flexibility to message your counselor at any time, and you can schedule video or phone sessions at your convenience, often from your own couch.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Jordan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Jordan.
This episode is sponsored in part by The Burden Podcast. If you're itching for a new true crime fix, let me clue you into something. The Burden, the latest investigative masterpiece from Orbit Media. After the wild ride that was Empire on Blood, they're back with what's shaping up to be this year's can't-miss true crime saga. This show tells the story of Detective Louis Scarcella, or Scarcella, I don't know, I still say Italian, so don't listen to me. Once celebrated for his prowess in solving tough cases in the 90s in New York City, so they probably call him Scarcella or something like that. Anyway, he becomes embroiled in controversy as a group of convicted murderers who, of course, all claim to be innocent, turned jailhouse lawyers uncover his involvement in dozens of cases, leading to the release of over 20 individuals that he helped convict. But then, can these guys get themselves out too? The government has paid out a record-breaking $150 million in wrongful conviction settlements, with more to come. That's our money, by the way, folks. Curious? You should be. Dive into The Burden on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like this episode of the show, I invite you to do what other smart and considerate listeners do, which is take a moment and support our amazing sponsors. All of the deals, discount codes, and ways to support the show are all searchable and clickable over at jordanharbinger.com/deals. And if you can't remember the name of the sponsor, you can't find the code, shoot me an email, jordan@jordanharbinger.com. I am more than happy to surface that code for you. It is that important that you support those who support the show. Now for the rest of my conversation with Bobby Gunn. You mentioned your dad is in his 80s. I read that fewer than 3% of travelers live even to age 65. And that's a shocking statistic.
Funny you said that, because we were talking earlier today. A lot of the young travel men that I see today, 25, 30-year-old, they look like they're 50. I can't believe the shape of them. They don't take care of their bodies. They're doing things they shouldn't be doing, I think. You know, be honest with you. The old man was always calisthenics training. He doesn't think he should drink it. The old man's not normal, Jordan. I see the old man drink 54 bottles of beer one night.
Oh my God.
And have a dance like Chuck Berry on the floor. He's not a normal man. It just can't go by the old man. He's not normal. But my grandfather before him was 90-something years old before he passed. My granny was 95.
Okay.
It was hard people. But the young generation today, they're not like the hardest. We're harder than Coffinels, our people.
Yeah.
Today, they're getting soft like Teletubbies. You know, they're still telling you they're not the same way.
I don't know what it is, and I don't want to speculate, but I assume there's some lifestyle changes that maybe have happened. But also, your lifestyle, I mean, look, there was, what was this in the book stating? It was like summer teeth. And it's like, what do you mean by summer teeth? It had something to do with pliers, summer in, summer not. That was, one, gross. And I'm no doctor, but that type of healthcare might have something to do with the lifespan of 65.
I had to fight a street one time, right? I fight a guy. I hit him, boom, and knocks him cold. My hands swollen, killing me. I goes home, and I tell his dad I had a fight. And dad says, come here, what's wrong with your hand, boy? He says, no, it's all hurting. Come here, he says, boy, come here in the sink. I put my hand in hot water, and I squeeze it like this, squeeze it, and a tooth popped out of my hand.
A tooth?
There was a tooth right there.
Obviously not yours.
Yeah, a tooth. But see, a human bite's worse than a dog's bite. I seen it all, man, in life. Listen, I've seen times where we were poor, so poor, I put water in the cereal and had money for milk. And I seen people drive by and they tell you about their money.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be little you. See, at the time, I was half Irish and half Scotch. You understand? I wasn't really a half breed or something silly like that to you. And when I got older, I mean, I had a lot of good cousins that loved me, always good my family, but a lot of ones shot me. And they let you know. They tell you real quick, they tell you all your faults. And that was my drive in life.
Mm-hmm.
To climb the mountain to get out of that mountain, the cesspool. And I don't want revenge. But I just wanted to know that I would never be like that. So I got a good heart, my pal. I won't insult somebody. I'll do you a favor if I can. Honest to God, if you're inside the road, I had $100 in my pocket. You had wee kids. I would give you the 100. I'll go get another 100. Because I know God will give me back 10 hearts if I do that. And I know I've seen that. I promise the Lord has repaid me so many times for good things I've done. But you see a lot of people in the world today, Jordan, wouldn't give you a glass of water if you're dying of thirst. How about the church, holy rulers? Go in the church. If you're broke down the side of the road, they better turn their head and pretend they didn't see you. Yet they'll put their hands up and tell you they love the Lord. See, actions speak louder than words. You do something, you do it. It's like this here, Jordan. How many times you see in a bar someone raving up and down, I'm a killer?
Yeah.
His bark's a lot more worse than his bite. But the little guy in the corner, don't say nothing. Start with him and you'll have one in your hands. That's the one you see. I learned things in life. The guy that raves up and down, blowing the big old horn, brother, he's the biggest puff in the house.
Jordan, just to speak to summer teeth.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the home remedies that Bobby was raised to be treated for his cuts. It's kind of like a Mad Max culture. It's an itinerant culture. A lot of it was based around automotive techniques.
Yes,
I think kerosene was rubbed on your cuts.
Oh my God. Yeah, tell me about that.
You said for sore tooth, a dab of starter fluid.
Starting fluid on a swab for a bad affected tooth.
I mean, I guess technically that might be effective for the wrong reasons.
I see my old man do self-operations. Look, you can't believe it. And put WD-40 on it. Like, that helps. It makes no sense. Okay, Dad. I mean, some things, brother, listen, I embrace the culture, but I won't do some things they do. Okay, I'm more civilized than that, but it's insane.
That's, I mean, I read the kerosene thing, like, oh, put kerosene on your cuts and help them heal. And I'm like, I'm going to Google this, but I think I already know the answer as to whether or not that's effective.
Something don't add up right here.
Like, maybe it kills the germs, but it also puts gasoline or petroleum into your bloodstream. So.
Brother, it's insane. See, just the work we used to do, like, we're spraying that little asphalt with no mask on.
Yeah.
Fumes for life in the big old bars. I was a wee boy. You know a 40-foot ladder, right?
Yeah.
Extended, 8 years old with a 20-pound paint rod on my back. Go up there and paint that roof now. 8, 9 years old.
Oh my God.
Up ladder. And you couldn't see the roof. And you're looking like you're going. He's going. I said, okay, Dad, trusted him. And spraying the roof down. Shh. And honest to God, brother, it made you better. I'm not complaining about it, but it wasn't normal, but that was our life.
Yeah.
Our life was normal to us because it was our life.
This is probably an obvious question, but so if you have an itinerant lifestyle, right, you're traveling all over the place and you're working at age 8 or whatever it was, are you not in school at all?
No, I wasn't in school. Well, I was a wee boy. It was actually grade 2, wasn't it?
I thought it was third grade.
Second or third, whatever it was. Anyways, in Canada, they were very different than teachers in America, right?
Okay.
I was sitting down trying to figure, he accused me of cheating on something. He took a ruler and he hit my hand. Well, I hit him a punch. I couldn't take the pain no more. He hit me three rounds. So I hit him. He got upset about it. And so dad came to school. This is no good for the boy. He can't do this no more.
Wow.
I sent him to his school. But listen, yes, unfortunately, I had no education, but I could. What I lost of being smart on books, I know the score. You know, I could read a bit. You know why I learned to read?
How's that?
Reading the Bible in box and magazines.
Ah.
I can't hardly write, can I, George? I can't write a letter. I can't spell you, but I can read anything. Is that weird?
Really? So you can't write, but you can read?
Yeah, I can read things. I can read the. I have no schooling, brother. I can't spell. I can't write a letter.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. I have to, I can't do it, but listen, I get by.
But it's part of that, Jordan, and Tyson Fury's done the same. Traveler culture, kids are usually taken out of school around age 11, middle school, the onset of puberty. They don't want them to assimilate with broader culture.
I see.
That's usually when they're taken out and taught their father's trade. Bobby got taken out earlier. It's part of that cloistered culture to pull kids from formal education.
If you think about it, Roma culture is actually quite famous. Like, everybody knows about, I mean, some of the sort of typecast stuff, like the psychic with the crystal ball, but like, everybody knows, oh, now, of course, I'm drawing a blank, but the dancing, the flamenco dancing, like, that's also Roma.
Elvis Presley was half traveler. You know that, right?
His mother. Did not know that. That's incredible. That totally makes sense now that you say that.
He was a twin. His mother was a Smith, an English traveler, Smith.
I think Yul Brynner also.
Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin. I thought Charlie Chaplin was Jewish. Are there Jewish travelers?
Tom Jones.
It's an oral tradition, Jordan, that they carry. And a lot of time I will have been at traveler gatherings and there will just be spontaneous songs break out. I mean, it's not a culture as deeply about academics and books, so to speak, but it is a gathering of community and a sharing of oral tradition, a sharing of song. I mean, it's a huge wealth of talented people in the traveler culture. And as Gunn, you know, is pointing out, some of them have broken through to mainstream, even though audiences wouldn't have known it.
That's God's truth. I mean, it's insane. With our people, at any time, it could be weddings, parties, you have no idea what could break out. I mean, I fought Roy Jones Jr., remember, coming back from the fight. Literally, this comeback fight, they stopped the fight, I cut my nose, which I walked back, everybody's being nice to me, here's the hotel, and here's the bar. Within seconds, I had a full fight with three or four people. My boy beat up one, we slaughtered him. And this happened right after the fight. And then after it was over, everybody went back to normal.
That is so bizarre.
I don't know where. It's insane, man.
Yeah.
It's the Wild West.
And Bobby's definitely one of the most famous travelers. Tyson Fury's a world heavyweight champion. He said Bobby Gunn is the king of bare knuckle boxing.
What's
amazing about Bobby, you know, he came up under Carl King, who was Don King's son, basically started at age 15 in Las Vegas, lying about his age, fighting in pro boxing matches, was a sparring partner, never really got his due, left the pro boxing world at about age 20, 21 when his mother died. 10 years he was in the underground and became a legendary, almost a myth, a fighter. But with the birth of his son, Bobby Jr., he wanted to show him he was more than that. Came back to pro boxing at age 30. I joined him for a lot of these fights. He fought major people, Thomas Adamack, James Toney, Roy Jones Jr. What was fascinating is a lot of these guys were world heavyweight boxers, world famous. They knew about Bobby's underground prestige now. Roy Jones Jr. came up in Gulf Coast, Florida. His father had cockfighting birds. He grew up around blood sports. And, you know, I interviewed him at a fight, and he found it fascinating, Bobby's background. So Bobby is a truly amazing story, and he did become an IBA, a world champion boxer, cruiserweight in his own right. But it's this underground legend in bare knuckle that has, funnily enough, made him world famous.
Yeah.
And now the sport that he helped bring back to the forefront of American culture is on the rise. It's the fastest rising combat sport in the world. Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship has, you know, 48 events across the country and world this year. Valuation, they put it around $400 million.
Right.
That's up from $500,000 they made in 2018 when Bobby fought in their first match in Wyoming. So
wow.
It really is just an amazing, amazing story.
And a lot of groups are coming up now. You know, like the BYB, that they're doing good. All these guys are trying to make Bare Knuckle Boxing become sanctioned. I fought the best fighters in the world in boxing, and I did it. But I would like to say this here, that I wasn't just fighting them. I had to fight the judges, referees. There was a lot of controversial like stoppages. Like, you know, you're talking right now. You know I don't care what I cut. I had to stop fights that I cut. But the guys I lost in the ring, I tell you what, they wouldn't last me 5 minutes in the street. And they know that, and I know that in my world. My world, It's a different world. And I was the king of my world for a long time, and I run it, and I'm proud, and I pray to God. All my things I went through, I try to pave the road for now to be a sanctions board. I worked so hard to make a sanction. We pushed so hard through commissions, and now it is going real good. It's doing wonderful. But I want everybody not to be under the ground, like be above the ground, legalized, and making money off it and doing good on it. And I hope that maybe I could pave the road for these guys to do it today the right way.
I mean, it sounds like you most certainly have. I know we're running out of time. I have a couple just quick ones here. So travelers are not supposed to socialize with people who are not travelers, right? Are you kind of an exception because you're a public figure?
Be honest with you, I always try to do my own thing. It might be out of the box, but I thank God I got a good pal here. I met this man coming. When I first met him, I thought he's a nice, good-looking little guy, maybe a little nerd. I didn't know first his little shoes on him.
That's a pretty accurate description, yeah. Bobby.
What a man to come in. I'll tell you what, listen, fair play to him, though, Jordan, like yourself. I know you're a proper man. He's a proper man here. He's been involved with a situation with me. My God, you're we family. I feel so bad, but he come through it. But what I'm saying to you, yes, a lot of times you don't socialize other groups that, but I'm glad I did. I met a good pal here. Two totally different worlds, but thank God for Jordan. And maybe my book could do anything. I would say to you this here. Well, I don't care who you are, what race you are, whatever religion you serve at your very best. And I promise you, if you want something, go for it. Because if you don't, you'll regret the rest of your life. And go for it. Don't let nobody tell you can't do something. Because see, they can do it. You block them out like a horse raised a horse. He puts the bridles on his eyes for a reason. Because you don't see the horse to right and the horse to left. The prize, the finish line. You might not get there fast, but you'll get there. I promise you, do it. Please go for it. Don't sit back and don't, I wish I would do that. Do it. Do it. You got one life. You got one name. You got one story. We all got stories. Everybody's got a book. Our own selves. Make your book a good book. Don't leave the pages blank. Fill in the gaps. Go for it in life. You can do it. You can do it. I did it. My God, brother. You can do it.
I really wish we did this one in person. One, I would take you guys out for, there's so many stories that we just don't even have time for, so I would love to.
I got to see you, Jordan. I want to come through and see you. Honest to God, I do. I want to see you.
Absolutely. Also, I'd have you teach me how to throw a legit punch, because I only know, like, judo chop nonsense, and I'm like, I could learn from this guy. I could use at least one move, you know, just in case. So I appreciate that. I wish you good health. All the best to you and your family, Bobby.
Thank you,
Staten,
Jordan.
Thank you for joining us as well. I know you booked a flight to get out there, and this has been a little bit of a technical cluster. And I just really appreciate you sharing all this today. It's incredible. I love this episode. I think it's so interesting.
Jordan, thank you. In closing, there's a poem in Edinburgh, Scotland, a wall. It says, and remember this, everybody hears, it says, life's the time you only borrow. Yet here today and gone tomorrow. Like a wee stored up on a wee river. You're here for a wee moment, you're gone forever. Go for it. Time goes by too quick. Go for it.
I've got some thoughts on this episode, but before I get into that, here's a trailer from my interview with Layla Ali, daughter of legendary boxer Muhammad Ali. She's got a great story about how she ended up the only other boxer in her family and how she carries her father's legacy.
You have to have it in you to want to be a fighter. It's not something that you just go, I think I'll just try boxing, you know, because you're going to get your ass beat if you get in there and you don't have it in you. When you get that opportunity, it was a brawl. I mean, it was bloody. It was like crazy. And I was like, I want to do that. You would think anyone punching you would hurt, right?
Yeah, sure.
But as fighters, it's like, oh, that person can punch, that person can't. Tapping you, tap, tap, tap. And then every once in a while, that bam, it's that hard one. Ooh, okay, I felt that. If you're listening to your camp saying, she's nothing, is she this, is she that? And then you have to get your ass in there and then you feel that punch like, no, she can punch. Uh-huh. No, she's not just a pretty baby. You see me across that ring looking at you like, yeah, remember all that stuff you talk? Now it's about to happen. Just me and you. Nobody else can get in there with you, you know? And it's like, I'm going to remind you of all the things you said. They didn't know that street side of me. Not everyone has that. You don't have to.
Sure.
But I do. Now you get to meet someone, you just see how they walk, see how they hold this stuff, and see if there's any fear in their eyes.
What was your father's reaction to you wanting to box?
He didn't like it.
No?
No.
You guys were sparring before you even put the gloves on.
Oh, yeah. He supported me, though. He came to a lot of my fights. He couldn't beat all of them. I could always see that glare in his eyes of him being proud. Right. And just to come into that arena and having everyone chanting, Ali, Ali. And you just see him light up to see me in that ring and him just remembering himself. Our boxing styles were similar, the way I'm shaped, my body shape. So just seeing all of that had to be a super crazy experience for him.
For more with Layla Ali, check out episode number 309 of the Jordan Harbinger Show. Man, I have to say, it was pretty sad that when he fought, when Bobby was fighting, that was really the only time that he got affection from his father. I mean, I know they have their relationship now, but it's a little bit heartbreaking somehow, just as a parent. He also told me something really interesting. He said before fights, he would hear a sound, like a whirring sound. And it didn't really make sense the way that we explained it, so we ended up cutting it out because it didn't quite work out. But it was a quite interesting sort of vibration that he claimed to hear. He was really focused and really in the zone, and it appears to have resulted almost in an auditory hallucination. Really interesting. I would love to have gotten more into that if we had time. I mentioned that he fought with all the different mobs. There's a couple of different notes here about the different kinds of mafiosi. So triads and yakuza, so the Asian gangs, Chinese and Japanese, they stayed completely silent during the fights. So you got these guys bashing each other's eyes out and stuff, and they were totally quiet. And if somebody went down or the fight was over, they would clap, just like golf. Others, of course, were more drunk and wild. You got the Irish, you got the Russians who handle everything with violence. Like they're just, even Bobby was like, man, these guys just handle everything with violence. Biker gangs, he said, were quite professional, but were obviously yelling and rowdy and drunk. And it's funny to see how the organized crime groups of each culture had their own unique subculture that was different from one another. I just thought that was kind of an interesting note. As far as cheating in the fighting goes, people try and headbutt. They try and duck their head down so you break your hand on their skull. I don't know if that's cheating, but that's sort of considered, you know, not cool. Other people forced others to throw fights, rig matches. A few times guys tried to bite him in the ring, as you heard. I mean, that is just some Mike Tyson-ish right there. Oh, and by the way, the term gypsy, as I mentioned in the top of the show, that term is offensive. It actually came about because people thought that Roma, the people who are originally from India, were Egyptian. But in truth, they were fleeing Islamic armies who were invading and colonizing countries all over the world. At that time, you had Islamic Arabic armies that were going into North Africa, that were going all over Asia. They were colonizing at that point in time, and they were pushing people out. And so essentially, the Roma and the travelers are permanently displaced people. And I'm not going to say any more about that because this is a political third rail topic right now, isn't it? And that's not what this episode is about, although I kind of want to cover it. Fun side note, I grew up playing lacrosse with John Sullivan, I think the fourth, the great-great-grandson or the great-grandson of the John Sullivan mentioned in this episode. Bobby's a hard worker, man. He trained hard. He fought hard. Now he does construction to pay the bills. I think it's good. He probably knew when to quit a very dangerous sport. This is not a sport where you can make a great living and save money for later and raise a family. Yes, you get paid, but you got to share it. And, you know, I don't think it's a great way to make a living just based on what it is. And it's a lot of time away from home, a lot of time healing. Terrible anecdote earlier about Disneyland. What is with Irish travelers in Disneyland, man? They love that place for some reason. I didn't realize they were getting kicked out because of, you know, who they are, but probably they've had trouble there for it. I mean, this episode sponsored by Disneyland. Come from Mickey Mouse, stay to get your teeth knocked out by a sock full of pennies by somebody's mom. I'm just surprised that they were getting removed from the park. I mean, it's the happiest place on earth, unless you're getting your teeth knocked out by the aforementioned sock full of pennies. Again, fascinating story, really interesting upbringing. I know that Bobby wants something different for his own children. I didn't mention this on the show because we ran out of time, but typically travelers pull their children out of school at age 12. I think Staten mentioned that. Bobby let his daughter stay in school and finish school and get married later because she loved school. And we didn't really get into this, but you know, it's his little girl. He wants something a little bit better for her. And we didn't get into detail on that, but I thought that was kind of a fascinating little note. You can just tell this is a guy who lives for his family, and props to him for that. Thanks to both Bobby and Staten for coming on the show today. All things Bobby Gunn and the book, of course, will be in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com. Transcripts will be in the show notes. Advertisers, deals, discount codes, and ways to support the show, all at jordanharbinger.com/deals. Please consider supporting those who support the show. And if you buy the book, which will be linked in the show notes, those book links help support the show as well. Also, we've just revamped our newsletter, Wee Bit Wiser. So instead of doing summaries of past episodes, we've actually reoriented the newsletter around one super brief, very practical takeaway. The idea is to give you something specific, something practical, something that'll have an immediate impact on your decisions, your psychology, your relationships, in under 2 minutes, making Wee Bit Wiser even weir. So if you weren't really feeling the newsletter before, a lot of you loved it, but I know it was longer. If you weren't really feeling it, you didn't think it was for you, stick with us. I think you're really going to like the new direction. And if you haven't signed up yet, I invite you to come check it out. It's a great companion to the show. jordanharbinger.com/news is where you can find it. 6-Minute Networking, don't forget about that over at 6minutenetworking.com.
I'm at Jordan Harbinger on Twitter and Instagram. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn. And this show, well, it's created in association with Podcast One. My team includes Jen Harbinger, Jace Sanderson, Robert Fogarty, and Gabriel Mizrahi. Remember, we rise by lifting others. The fee for this show is you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. The greatest compliment you can give us is to share the show with those you care about. So if you know somebody who's interested in these kinds of sports, bare knuckle stuff, the traveler life, whatever it is, definitely share this episode with them. In the meantime, I hope you apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you learn. And we'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. Not sure if you heard, but I do a podcast Monday through Thursday. Wherever you listen to podcasts, I team up with the very best comedians in the world, plus critical thinkers and all-around nut jobs, and offer my personal insight on current events, the state of the nation, and the stories you may have missed. As the world gets crazier every day, you can stay fairly sane. I'll keep you there. I'll handle the crazy. Nuance is often lost on today's world, but you can find it right here. Available wherever you listen to finer podcasts. I'm Adam Carolla, and I approve of this message.